Imagine you are walking through the streets of Granada in 1492. Like overnight, the street signs have changed. The mosques are draped in crucifixes, and well, the Sultan has been replaced by a king and queen you have never actually met.
Right, yeah.
But, while everyone else is looking at Columbus, you are looking at a city that is basically a high-stakes live-action renovation.
Totally. It was a massive century-long identity crisis.
Exactly. So today we are diving into David Coleman's research on 16th-century archives to explore how Granada became this ultimate frontier experiment.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because, we usually think of a frontier as some vast, empty wilderness, but Granada was a frontier because the old social roles just sort of vanish.
Right.
Like in an established Spanish city, say Seville, if you were a Jewish convert to Christianity, you were blocked by old Christian guilds and these ancient family hierarchies.
Oh, wow.
But in Granada, there were no guilds yet. There was no established Christian elite to tell you no.
So it is kind of like a 16th century Silicon Valley. Like a startup city where your lineage mattered less than your ability to, well, hustle.
Yeah, you could definitely say that.
But I do have to push back there a bit. Calling it a land of opportunity feels a little glossy when the whole thing was, built on the collapse of a sultanate.
Yeah.
Was it not less of a startup and more like urban hacking in a literal war
Oh,
zone?
you are absolutely right. It was incredibly dangerous. And I mean, the crown knew that, which is why they offered franquezas, which are basically massive tax exemptions.
Like hazard pay.
Exactly, like hazard pay to lure people in. They really needed a buffer against the Ottoman threat and internal rebellions.
Wow.
So you would see women and entire families moving in, which really did not happen as much in the New World. They were literally gambling their lives for a chance at a clean slate.
And that gamble paid off, or, it did not, in some pretty dramatic ways if you look at the archives, like Juan de Latour.
Oh, yeah, the silk tax guy.
Right. He was a converso who basically bought the right to collect revenue for the crown. On a frontier, the king needs cash way more than a pure family tree.
Yeah, he became incredibly powerful. But then on the flip side, you have Juana Gonzalez, a merchant who played by those exact same rules but ended up begging in the streets.
The frontier had no safety net at all.
None. And for the natives, the Moriscos, the former Muslims, the stakes were obviously even higher. We often hear they were this monolithic block of resistance.
Right, which isn't true.
Exactly. The archives show families like the Hermes family actually marrying into the Christian elite. They were integrating into the new power structure, not just surviving.
I do wonder, though, is that true integration or just a really sophisticated survival tactic? I mean,
Right.
look at Francisco Núñez Moly.
Oh, his memorial to the crown is just brilliant.
It really is. He did not argue from a religious standpoint at all. He used their own legal logic.
Yes. He argued that the Arabic language and traditional dress were just cultural, not Islamic.
Right. He was trying to hack the system to say, hey,
Yeah.
I can look like a Moor, but pray like a Christian.
Exactly. He was decoupling identity from faith. And the authorities hated that. They even tried a segregation accord in 1498 to keep Christians and Moriscos apart.
But that was a total failure, right?
A complete failure. The city was way too cramped. If you lived in the Alcazaba district, you were not behind some wall. You were sharing a marketplace with the exact people the law said you shouldn't even talk to.
So it sounds like that whole DIY spirit of the frontier even applied to the church. I mean, if the top-down leadership, like the archbishops, were absent, did this DIY religion make things more prone to conflict?
Well, the commoners just sort of took charge. Look at the parish of San Roque, also known as Santa Maria Magdalena.
Right.
It was not a grand Vatican project. It was built by Asturian laborers, immigrant workers who basically said, "We need a church, so we are going to build one."
Wow, they just did it themselves.
Yeah, and this bottom-up Catholicism made the faith feel really personal. It actually made it much more resilient when the 1568 Alpujarra's Rebellion eventually broke out.
So you have this city trying to force a new identity onto an old landscape, but like they're using the old tools to do it.
Exactly. I mean, look at the skyline today.
Yeah.
Even after the 1570 expulsions, the new Christian churches were built in the Mudéjar style, using Islamic architectural techniques and the actual physical foundations of old mosques.
Which is just the ultimate irony. In this desperate effort to purify the city, they basically ended up preserving the very culture they tried to erase.
Yeah, they really did.
Makes you wonder, when we try to completely renovate ourselves, whether it is a city's history or our own lives, do we ever actually start with a clean slate? Or are those old foundations always there, holding up the new structure in ways we do not even realize? something to mull over.
Definitely. Well, this exploration into the source material was based on David Coleman's research. Thanks for joining us.